Introducing two new and improved Jeremy's Razors. Fighting the left and building the future means constantly bringing your best, and that's exactly what Jeremy's Razors is doing. Choose between the new and improved Precision 5 Razor for an exceptionally smooth and close shave, or the brand new Sprint 3 Razor for a quick, clean shave. The new razors feature top-to-bottom redesign. Enjoy an ergonomic handle designed for superior durability. The new coated stainless steel blades are sharper, so they last longer. Increased flexibility allows the razor to better contour to your face to reduce nicks and cuts. Plus, the lubricating strip is now equipped with argan oil and aloe. It's time to toss out that woke razor and get yourself a Precision 5 or Sprint 3 trial kit today. Pledge to fight the left and build a future with Jeremy's Razors. Go to jeremysrazors.com and order yours today.
A new investigation published in the American Psychologist Journal has discovered that artificial intelligence can now predict people's political orientation, even from blank faces, which is not at all surprising to me. If your face is blank, you are probably a liberal. This is not even an original observation. Bob Hope expressed the same intuition in 1940.
The zombie has no will of his own. You see them sometimes walking around blindly with dead eyes, following orders, not knowing what they do, not caring.
You mean like Democrats?
Even beyond the blank faces, I don't mean to diminish the study, but is this discovery really that impressive? Most of us can predict people's politics by looking at them. If you have crazy colored hair and weird piercings and look like you hate your dad, you're probably a liberal. If you're wearing a collared shirt and part your hair, you're probably a conservative. More controversially, if you're a black person, you're probably a Democrat. I don't like that fact. I wish that fact weren't true. I'm friends, as some of you know, with many black Republicans, but it's just statistics. Around 90% of black people are Democrats, and 90% odds are pretty good for predictions. If you're a young white woman, you are also probably a Democrat. It's less certain, but it's also pretty good odds. We are impressed by the supposed predictive power of these machines, not because the power is in itself impressive, but because political correctness, wokeness, has shamed us into denying that we have the same power ourselves. We have been told for decades that pattern recognition and predictions are prejudiced and therefore evil. But we all act on prejudices all day, all the time. If we had to write out technical, analytical treatises on the motivations for every decision that we make, we would not be able to get out of bed in the morning. AI has its algorithms. Human beings have our guts. They are both wrong sometimes. They can both be used in unjust ways, but they are also both necessary tools for fulfilling our purposes. And they're often pretty accurate, whether we want to admit it or not. I'm Michael Knowles. This is The Michael Knowles Show. The liberal globalists are ramping up the censorship regime. Coincidentally, in the lead up to the 2024 election, it's not only affecting America, it is affecting the entire world. It is coming to a screen near you. It's coming to a social media account near you. We will get into the latest development and how, you know, I hate to say I told you so. And we will be interviewing one of the key figures in this story, Billboard Chris, later on in the member block, membrum segmentum. So stick around for that. First, though, speaking of predicting things, some really, really great news. Carrie Lake, who is a Republican running for Senate in Arizona, has just come out and described Arizona's lack of enforcement of an 1864 abortion ban as unfortunate. Just one little word is the whole news story here, but it's a really important news story, and I'm really pleased to see it. Carrie Lake just did this interview with the Idaho Dispatch. She was asked about a recent court decision that said, yes, an Arizona law from 1864 can be enforced to ban abortions in the wake of the Dobbs decision, which overrules Roe v. Wade. Pro-lifers were thrilled by this court decision. This is great. The people of Arizona voted a long time ago, but they still voted to ban abortion, to stop killing little babies in the state. And this is great news. Carrie Lake then came out against that decision, as did some other politicians around the country, but we'll just focus on the Arizona politicians for a second. And pro-lifers were kind of outraged by this. And now Carrie Lake has come out and said, the Arizona Supreme Court said this is the law of Arizona, but unfortunately, the people running our state have said we're not going to enforce it. She was very disappointed in the Arizona governor, Katie Hobbs, and Attorney General Chris Mays, both Democrats. Carrie Lake said, we don't have that law as much as many of us wish we did. So what's going on here? Well, you will recall a few weeks ago, Carrie Lake's campaign put out some glossy new video where she seemed to squish on abortion. And at the time, I said, I like Carrie Lake. I want her to win this race in Arizona. I want her to be a senator from Arizona. But this was a dumb move from the Lake campaign to squish on abortion. It's not going to attract any voters from the pro-abortion side. It's going to alienate voters from the pro-life side, which Republicans need because they're very effective boots on the ground. And it's a bedrock principle. So I'm not saying you got to campaign on this as your number one issue. As a matter of prudence, probably you should not. But likewise, you don't, you know, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. Don't try to split the baby. I don't know how many more baby metaphors I have, but don't do it. Don't all of a sudden become a pro-abortion candidate. And I said, in, I thought, charity and prudence, I said, I don't think this was just a decision that Carrie Lake made one day, you know, off the cuff. All of a sudden, she's pro-abortion now. I said, this ad was definitely concocted by some campaign committee with all the genius DC consultants. And the thing about all those genius DC consultants is a lot of them are complete dummies. And this is just not going to play. And so I said, Carrie Lake campaign, you might hate me for telling you this, but I'm your friend here. I'm giving you good advice, which is cut it out. Don't flip on the fundamental issue that is so close to the hearts of so many conservative voters. I mentioned this in the show. I felt very charitably. I gave a speech about this. I forget which school I was speaking at. It's a little bit of a blur with all of these schools that I spoke at this semester. But I gave a speech and I said, I want her to win. I'm not the enemy here. I'm not rooting for Carrie Lake to lose. But if the Carrie Lake campaign keeps going down this path of supporting abortion, it's going to hurt her. She will lose in that case. Said, how are we supposed to do it? We should stand firm on principle, and then we should be wise as serpents and innocent as doves, and just maybe downplay the issue a little bit in the 2024 election when it's kind of hot, and focus on the issues that Biden and the Democrats are really vulnerable on, which is the border, which is the economy, which is foreign wars, which is basically everything that Joe Biden has touched. So I'm very pleased to see that they've made this change. I even noticed at the time, I think the Lake campaign was angry with me. Carrie Lake's official Twitter account unfollowed me on Twitter. Clearly they were miffed about it. Again, I know a lot of campaign workers control those accounts too. So maybe someone was angry that I called for a campaign staffer to be fired or something. But in any case, I don't really care about any of that. I am just glad that the campaign got the message, whatever that dumb ad was, that I'm glad they're reversing course. They're saying, no, we're still pro-life. We want the law to be enforced to protect babies in the state, but we're going to move on and we're going to focus on other issues. But we are still pro-life. We do not support abortion. Great stuff. Love that. That's a smart move. It's the right thing to do. It demonstrates some coherence to one's political views, and it will encourage your voters. It's probably, if you don't focus on it too much, it's not going to alienate the crazy pro-abortion Democrats any more than they already were. It's certainly not going to alienate moderates and independents if you don't focus on it too much. This is the right thing to do. Good stuff. Other Republican campaigns, take note. And Carrie Lake, good job. Glad to see that. There's so much more to say. First, though, go to puretalk.com/Knowles. Thanks to Bidenflation, $20 gets you not very much these days. But you know what it will get you? From my cell phone company, Pure Talk, you can get unlimited talk, text, and plenty of 5G data for just $20 a month. Pure Talk is offering top-tier coverage on America's most dependable 5G network for half the cost of other carriers. The average family saves almost $1,000 a year, all with no contracts and no activation fees. You can switch to Pure Talk with the phone and phone number you currently use. Their U.S. customer service team can help you join Pure Talk in as little as 10 minutes. Spend your hard-earned money with a wireless company that shares your values, supports our military and veterans, creates American jobs, and refuses to advertise on fake news networks. Don't spend another day. spending ridiculous amounts on your phone plan. Go to puretalk.com/Knowles, K-N-O-W-L-E-S. Right now, our listeners can get an additional 50% off their first month. You did not hear me incorrectly. I did not stutter. We are talking about America's most dependable 5G network, and you'll save a ton of money. puretalk.com/Knowles. Now, speaking of life, really disturbing story out of an IVF clinic in Newport Beach, California. Nine couples are suing the Ovation Fertility IVF store in Newport Beach, California, alleging that the IVF sale, the baby salesman knowingly implanted dead embryos into patients to cover up a lab mistake. Now there's a lot in even that first sentence of the article, right? Which is, hold on, they implanted dead embryos to cover up a lab mistake. Well, what's the mistake? The mistake is, according to these court filings, that a lab embryologist accidentally injected the embryos, that is to say the babies, the little human beings, with hydrogen peroxide or some other different toxic substance. Instead of a sterile solution, they injected the babies with poison, and oopsie daisy, they accidentally killed them instantly. And then to cover up this mistake, the dead babies were then implanted in the mothers who paid for this service. The whole thing is the stuff of nightmares. The whole thing is out of a horror movie. Even the way that we're talking about the babies here is especially dehumanized. It's especially ghastly. Oh, yeah, there was a lab mistake. Well, the lab mistake was that a worker poisoned little babies, killing them instantly. And then implanted these dead babies in a womb. And apparently, according to the court filings, the mothers figured it out. The lawsuit alleges that these employees were aware that the embryos were dead, and they chose to have them implanted into the would-be mothers. Really, really awful. The defenders of the surrogacy industry, the defenders even just of IVF on its own, will say, oh, well, this was just a mistake. It happens. You know, it's a bad mistake, but that's any human endeavor, any commercial endeavor, any scientific endeavor. They're going to have these kind of mistakes sometimes. That's true. That is one reason that we don't commoditize human beings. Because you're right, commercial endeavors do sometimes make mistakes. There are problems with inventory, you know, problems with labor relations. Sometimes, you know, we accidentally destroy products, or we make them defective because of our own negligence. And, you know, oopsie daisy, right. That's one thing if you're making widgets at the widget factory. It's another if you've decided to make human beings at the widget factory. It's one thing if you're shipping and selling, I don't know, you know, beach umbrellas. It's quite another if you're shipping and selling human beings. The problem with IVF, the reason that it is wrong, we all see this in the surrogacy industry when we go out and someone rents a woman's womb and then purchases eggs from another woman, and then two men or two women or a single mother or even a single man in some cases will go and just catalog order a baby to his precise specifications. And then sometimes if the baby comes out wrong, the purchaser of this child will demand that the baby be killed through abortion. That has happened. There have been court cases on this, and the babies have been killed actually as a result. Or, you know, a defect comes out. They say, we don't want the baby anymore, whatever. The reason that this is all wrong, even down to IVF itself, not even the surrogacy industry is so manifestly awful and contrary to human dignity. We barely even have to talk about it, I think. But even IVF, the thing that makes it wrong is not just that, practically speaking, during the process of IVF, babies are killed because they create too many embryos and then they throw them in a freezer forever and ultimately they kill them. The problem is not just that lab technicians sometimes, whoopsie-daisy, accidentally poison the kids and kill them instantly. The problem with IVF is that it treats human beings as a product to be bought and sold, as a commodity, and that is wrong. That is always wrong and contrary to human nature, because human beings are not objects to be instrumentalized for our own pleasure. Human beings are proper subjects with rights of their own. This is human trafficking. That's what it is. And it's sometimes difficult to see. It's difficult to see because we're talking about little tiny babies. You know, this is part of the reason why the pro-abortion crowd has so much trouble understanding the really simple concept that by definition, life begins at the beginning of life, and that human beings are always human beings, and that as life exists, it constitutes a life. I mean, it's a truism is what I'm saying, but it's hard for them to see that because they say, well, but in the womb, the babies are really little or, you know, they look kind of funny. Yeah, well, that's true. You look kind of funny when you're an old man too. It doesn't mean they're not human beings. It's difficult to see it, but that's what it is. What is human trafficking? Human trafficking is when you are treating people as commodities to be bought and sold and shuffled around like objects. That's what's going on here. This couple, probably with the best of intentions, went to the baby store and this ghastly nightmare occurred. They created a bunch of children. A lab technician accidentally poisoned their children, killing them instantly, and then implanted their dead bodies into the mother. And the mothers figured this out. And they're naturally traumatized by this, and they're rightly suing the IVF company. It's a baby store. The problem here is not just that the baby store acted in a particularly vividly awful way. The problem is that there is such a thing as a baby store. That's a term like baby store used to be the stuff of jokes. It's the sort of thing that parents would joke about with their kids. Oh, you know, if you keep that up, I'm going to return you to the baby store. Now that's real. Now that joke is real and it's horrifying, and we need to acknowledge that reality. Unfortunately, a lot of individual parents are recognizing that reality. When a lab technician, whoopsie daisy, accidentally mixes the wrong sperm with the wrong egg, and parents who have never met each other now have a child, that's another real court case. Well, oh, darn, all right, I guess we're going to sue the company. Okay, you're going to sue the company, and maybe this mother will get some money and this father will get some money. What about the kid? You made a human being. Because you decided to treat human beings like a commodity to be bought and sold rather than as a human with proper rights, as a subject. What do you do about him? He's a human being. Or, you know, a baby's implanted in the wrong mother and then everyone has to sue because, the wrong baby came out of the wrong mother and we got to figure out. And after a few months, we'll all trade babies. And, you know, what about the poor baby who's been bonding with the mother? What about individuals are learning this the hard way. Just this has happened with a lot of issues, like the transgender issue. In theory, a lot of people think, well, if a man wants to slap on a skirt and call himself Sally, who am I to judge? What do I care? It doesn't affect me. Okay, well, but what does that actually look like in reality? In reality, you're taking people who are extremely mentally disturbed, and then you're shaving off a lot of their forearm, their flesh, and then you're using that to construct a Frankenstein-looking phallus that you're attaching to them like some monster in a horror movie, and then you're not treating any of their psychological conditions. In fact, the best data set we have on this suggests that these so-called therapies, if anything, will make the condition worse. And then you're going to force young girls to use the bathroom and use the changing room with big mentally ill men. And you're going to force society to deny sexual difference, which is the fundamental distinction within human nature. So actually, it's kind of dark. You know, it's kind of bad, actually. Oh, and then by the way, if parents don't go along with this absurdity, we're gonna use the power of the state to take their kids away because we've determined as a matter of law that men can actually become women and women can actually become men. And the reason we did that is not because people really believe that. Most people don't. It's because of the attitude of moral cowards and just people who are publicly lazy, politically lazy. They don't want to actually engage in these civic conversations or deal with these issues or make anyone, you know, feel bad. So we all just kind of pretend or turn a blind eye and society crumbles around us. There are real victims to that. The people, not least of all, the people who have their forearms chopped off and shaved off and then go through all sorts of awful therapies and psychological traumas and physical traumas and actually die early very often as a result of it. All because we say, well, you know, who cares? It doesn't affect you, do you? Doesn't it say kind of, you know, why not? They want this. The two men, they want to have a child. They don't want to get married and do this, but they want to have a child. Well, who are you to say otherwise? The man who thinks he's a woman, he wants to. Who are you to say? Because there's such a thing as reality, and we have reason, and we live in a society, and we have some right to the truth. And we have some right not to be forced to live according to lies when the lies harm everyone. Capisce? Capite, bravissimi ragazzi? Okay, I think so. Speaking of changing political opinions, I touched on this story a little bit yesterday. I don't want to totally move on because we talked about the crazy student protests at Columbia. Well, it's not just Columbia. It's my old stomping grounds over at Yale University. Police in riot gear showed up to Yale's campus early on Monday and arrested students who refused to clear out of one of the main parts of campus right in front of the commons. The reason for this is they've been camping out. They've even become a little bit violent. There was a Yale student who runs the Yale Free Press, was investigating these pro-Palestine liberation protests, who had her eye poked with a Palestinian flag. So it's getting pretty violent. It takes a lot for Yale to take disciplinary action ever on students. You pretty much can't get in trouble at Yale. It's a very coddled place. Certainly was when I was there. I think it's only become more coddled in the ensuing decade. But the cops are showing up here because this is getting really weird and crazy and out of hand. So, I'm kind of a glass half full guy. I don't really like idle complaining and whining. I don't think it serves anything and it makes everyone kind of annoyed. So what's the glass half full here? Because I actually do love my college, as crazy as it is. And, it pains me to see this once great university just collapsing into mayhem, like all of our universities. Well, the glass half full to me is maybe this will convince parents not to send their kids to those schools. Maybe this will convince the donors. My dollar could be used elsewhere. I wanted to go to Yale from the time I was a kid. I don't know why. I really, it had it was prestigious. I knew it was politically important. I know it was known for its arts. I always liked the arts. If this were 20 years ago, I would say, I wonder if my kids will get into Yale. These days, I have conversations with my wife. I say, is there any circumstance in which we would allow our children to go to Yale? Is there any circumstance in which I would allow? Because in large part of craziness like this at Yale and Columbia and Harvard and Princeton and many, many other schools around the country, maybe the glass half full here is, as people see this, as they see the universities crumbling, as the prices go up and the kids get crazier, and the return on your investment is you send your well-adjusted kid off to these schools, you pay $250,000, and you get back, your kid hates you and hates his own country, doesn't even know what sexy is. If that's not going to force the schools to change, nothing will. There is so much more to say. First, though, go to zapmydebt.com. Does your debt keep you tossing and turning at night? It's like you just can't get away from it. The unfortunate reality is that our banking system is designed to trap you in debt. These insanely high interest credit cards and loans make it nearly impossible to pay off your debt. Thankfully, there is a way out of the debt trap with Pivotal Debt Solutions. Pivotal Debt Solutions can cut or even eliminate interest. They will help find programs to write off your balances so you owe less. They can stop those threatening phone calls. The bottom line is that Pivotal Debt Solutions will find every solution possible to end your debt permanently. Before you do anything, contact Pivotal Debt Solutions at zapmydebt.com. Talk to them for free and find out how fast they can help you get out of debt. That is zapmydebt.com right now. Do not allow the headache, the menacing of debt to keep you up or allow you to lose even one more minute of sleep. Pivotal Debt Solutions can help. Go to zapmydebt.com. Talk to them for free and figure out how you can get out of debt. Zapmydebt.com. Big, big stories on campus. So it's not just a little school news story. This is a national news story. It obviously has to do with a major political issue, which is American foreign involvement, especially in war. What does President Trump have to say about this?
What's going on at the college level and the colleges, Columbia, NYU, and others, is a disgrace. And it's really on Biden. He has the wrong signal. He's got the wrong tone. He's got the wrong words. He doesn't know who he's backing. And it's a mess. And if this were me, you'd be after me. You'd be after me so much, but to try to give him a pass. But what's going on is a disgrace to our country.
And it's all Biden's fault, and everybody knows it. He's got no message. He's got no compassion. He doesn't know what he's doing. He can't put two sentences together, frankly. He is the worst president in the history of our country. And again, what's going on is a disgrace.
This is the perfect way for Republicans, especially for the Republican presidential nominee, to respond to this issue, because it's a really thorny political issue. The Gaza war, it's obviously awful and a lot of people are dying and it's very, very sad. As an American political issue, it's especially tough for the Democrats because Republicans are mostly pro-Israel. There are some people who are anti-Israel, but mostly 80% plus of Republicans are pro-Israel. For the Democrats, it's a little less clear. The donor and establishment class is pro-Israel. The base is vehemently anti-Israel, which means that the Gaza war is a wedge issue for the Democrats. But there are plenty of conservatives who say, man, even if I like Israel, I don't want any money going to foreign aid for any country. We got enough problems and we have a big national debt. Or some will say, you know, I actually don't like the state of Israel for XYZ reason or this. So it's a thorny issue. It's one of infamously one of the thorniest foreign policy problems, probably an intractable foreign policy problem. So Trump avoids the minefield. Trump doesn't come in. He says, look, we're pro-Israel. We support Israel. We don't support Hamas. But when he's weighing in on the campus protests, he's not saying, well, they're right about this, and actually the Israelis need to invade Rafah, and here's why the IDF did this, that. He doesn't get involved in any of that. He says, yeah, what's going on campus is a disgrace, and it's all Biden's fault. And that is a simple message, and it's a true message. It's not even just gratuitously casting blame at one's opponent. When Trump was president, everyone just kind of chilled on the foreign front. Even Putin stopped invading countries. Putin's been invading countries for every president of my lifetime since the new millennium, except for Trump. He just kind of chilled during Trump. Iran just kind of chilled during Trump. Saudi Arabia and Israel made peace during Trump. Kim Jong-un played nice with America for the first time, I don't know, since the Korean War broke out. Trump was a good foreign policy president. Biden is a terrible foreign policy president. Everyone knows all this stuff is his fault. You don't need to know anything about the Israel-Gaza war. You don't need to know where Rafah is. You don't need to know where Haifa is. The current president of the United States doesn't know where either of those places are either. And the average voter certainly doesn't have time to think about it. It's okay. All you need to know, this is all Biden's fault. What's going on campus is a disgrace. It's all Biden's fault. Elect me. A beautiful, simple message. This is a guy who knows how to communicate and who knows how to cut to the heart of political issues. Now, speaking of major opposition to conservatives who are pushing back against the liberal establishment. You all know by now how much I hate to say I told you so. But when I have to, I have to. Because a story that I broke over a year ago is now shaping up into an international lawsuit that could fundamentally change what free speech means and how it is practiced all over the world. I mentioned last January 2023, in a long Twitter thread, that liberal globalists were attempting to shape the future of media through a political technology called safety by design, which was being pushed by the World Economic Forum and the Australian government. The Australian e-safety commissioner, Julie Inman Grant, who was a Twitter employee in the pre-Elon days, the pre-X days, was named to lead a World Economic Forum coalition to export Australia's social media censorship regime all over the world. For those who do not remember this particular liberal bureaucrat, she went viral for demanding a, quote, recalibration of free speech.
We are finding ourselves in a place where we have increasing polarization everywhere, and everything feels binary when it doesn't need to be. So I think we're going to have to think about a recalibration of a whole range of human rights that are playing out online, you know, from freedom of speech to the freedom to, you know, to be free from online violence, or the right of data protection to the right to child dignity.
Just need a little recalibration, you know, especially in this election year. We got to recalibrate your free speech, huh? Anyway, my prediction first started to come true about 3 months later when Redux, which is an international publication, published an article about an American transvestite man named Riley Dennis, who was attempting to join a women's soccer league and reportedly caused injuries during the games because he's a man and men are physically stronger than women. That same month, the Australian government demanded that Redux delete the article, claiming that the reporting violated Australian law, even though Redux is not an Australian publication. Redux has writers all over the place, including in America. Nevertheless, the Australian government demanded censorship. Fast forward to this past February, an anti-transgenderism advocate named Billboard Chris tweeted about the World Health Organization's decision to hire a lady trans activist who calls herself Teddy Cook to draft the WHO's policy on trans care. Now, Ms. Cook has reportedly posted some depraved content, let's say, I'll be diplomatic about it, to social media, including bestiality, okay, including like people and animals. This seems relevant that maybe one of the people responsible for crafting global policy on sexual health might herself be a psychosexual deviant. Once again, the Australian government ordered that this reporting be removed from X, or else the platform, thanks to Chris, would face a fine of roughly $500,000 US. Fast forward to this month. The prolific tweeter Ian Miles Chong posted on X about the multiple mass stabbings in Australia. You remember, we covered it on the show, at a mall and then at a church. Obviously, this is newsworthy. There was this horrific attack against Christians, including a bishop of an Eastern Christian sect. A day later, the eSafety Commissioner demanded that all videos and photos of the mall stabbing be deleted from Ian's account. Then X was hit broadly on the church stabbing. We can't have any reporting about this kind of violence, especially violence against Christians, going viral on social media. No, no, no. That doesn't fit the liberal narrative. It's got to go. The Australian globalists were not even satisfied that the post be censored in Australia. The Global Government Affairs account for X reported a few days later that Australia had demanded that X censor the posts globally, or else face a daily fine of roughly $500,000 US. Now, happily, that demand was too much for Elon Musk, whose spokesman, who argued that Australian globalists had no right to censor content globally, came out swinging. Musk put it himself, quote, "Our concern is that if any country is allowed to censor content for all countries, which is what the Australian eSafety Commissar is demanding, then what is to stop any country from controlling the entire internet?" Huh? So where do things stand now? Well, one Australian senator is calling for Elon Musk to be imprisoned.
Elon Musk has no social conscience or conscience whatsoever. I don't know, whatever Elon Musk is on, it says that that's okay to continue to air that is absolutely disgusting behaviour. And quite frankly, the bloke should be jailed. And the sooner that we can bring rules in or do something about this sort of game playing with our social media, the better off we're going to be. But quite frankly, the power that that man has, because of that platform that he's on, it's got to stop. It has absolutely got to stop.
That power that that man has, I want that power. Why does he have that power? I want to have that power. Additionally, the Australian Prime Minister is vowing to make social media companies censor more content. And the Australian people are downloading X like never before. Actually, the way it's turned out is the Australians are making this the top downloaded news app in the country, much to the chagrin of their government, I'm sure. The issue will have to be resolved in some court or another. Why this fight seems to be centered around X is clear enough. It does not seem like YouTube, for instance, is being asked to delete this kind of content. It doesn't seem like the more liberal social media platforms are being targeted in this way. Elon, in particular, is being singled out here. One suspects it might be because he's the only big tech billionaire standing up against the left's agenda. And so, the fate of global speech stands to be decided in a fight between an American lady who moved to Australia to censor the internet and a South African man who moved to America who is telling her that she can't. Only going to heat up from here, I am sure. Now, speaking of trans issues, this is a story I meant to get to last week, and I don't want to let it go because there's been too much letting it go going on with the story generally. You remember the shooting at Covenant School when a trans-identifying shooter goes in and murders a bunch of Christian kids. And the person left a manifesto, and we just haven't gotten the manifesto. Usually when there's a mass shooting, a mass stabbing, even any, we get that manifesto in 2 seconds, especially if it's a white guy, especially if the guy can be called right wing at all. In this case, seems pretty clear we're not talking about a right wing white Christian male. We don't get the manifesto. So Laura Fox, who's an attorney for the city of Nashville, has just said, the city's police are still investigating the shooting. They're probing whether this trans-identifying killer had any accomplices, and so they're hoping to wrap up their investigation by July 1st. This investigation's been going on now for over a year. It's still going to be going on for a few months. And this spokesman says the police are prepared to release most of the investigative file, excluding some details about school security and reasonable extractions. Also, I forget exactly what word I'm looking for, but you get the point. Reasonable deductions. I don't know. Some kind of action. When questioned, the spokesman said that she thinks the killer's journal, which was found in the car that she left at school, would also be able to be released to the public. Okay. At least we have a date. That's good. But it's a date that's not binding. She says, yeah, I hope by July 1st. I'm hoping that's what, but you know, we'll see. And then, you know, probably after that, we'll be able to get the info. Okay, well, I'll look forward to July 1st. And we'll cover it again on July 1st because it's very easy to just push these things off and off and off until people forget. That's what they're all hoping for here. I think what the libs want is for this to become the next Las Vegas shooting. Remember that Las Vegas shooting where the gunman opened up from the hotel and killed a ton of people at that concert and then we just never really heard anything about it again. We heard it was a lone gunman, even though there were witnesses who said it sounded like there were multiple people and there's just no way that this one guy could have gotten all these guns up there. Nothing about this thing added up. And then, boop, bye, see you later. Nope, no more. This isn't a story anymore. I think that's exactly what they want to do with the trans killer in Nashville. And the only way that they won't be able to get away with that is if we just keep asking them about it. What they are counting on is that we will all forget. I, for one, will not forget. I suspect you will not either. As Russia continues to capture global headlines with controversial actions, What We Saw, an Empire of Terror, hosted by Bill Whittle, provides a timely exploration of the country's tumultuous history. The complete series is streaming now exclusively on Daily Wire Plus. Explore the extreme depths of communist policies and the brutal treatment of its people under Joseph Stalin, showcasing the worst of Soviet Russia that history books refuse to reveal. Understand the centuries-long history that shaped modern-day Russia, and the communist ideology that threatens our own homeland. Watch What We Saw, an Empire of Terror, streaming now exclusively on Daily Wire Plus. If you are not a member, sign up today at dailywireplus.com. My favorite comment yesterday is from ReachCBSBWB3554, who says, personally, I would rather work 4 10- to 12-hour shifts than work 5 8- to 10-hour days. Totally, totally. I think that's true for most people. And a lot of people work more than an 8 or 10 hour shift, even though they're doing 5 days a week. Because it's tough out there and the Biden economy is awful and people have to make ends meet. So this is in response, I assume, to the story on the millennials advocating for a 4-day work week. And that's why my answer is not just the total boomer Gen X answer. You know, you need to be working all the time, clocking in, clocking out 9 to 5, 5 days a week, maybe a week or two of vacation a year. And that's not my answer. I'm totally open in principle to a 4-day work week. And maybe it does make workers more productive. And maybe people do prefer it. And maybe all those things are true. I'm a little skeptical, but maybe it's all true. The only question is, what are people going to do with that time? The reason to do that for the good of individuals and for the common good of society is if people are going to contribute to culture, if people know how to make sense of leisure, if we know how to make sense of our freedom. In the early American Republic, people would, they didn't have a 3-day weekend, but if they did, they would have known what to do with it. Because the kinds of virtues that constitute what we now call the liberal arts, were much more prevalent. They were much more widely and deeply inculcated in those earlier days of our republic. Now we don't really know what to do with it. And so a 3-day weekend, if that just means people are going to smoke more pot and look at more porn and play more video games or something, that's actually probably not good for anybody. It's not good for the country. It's not good for individuals. So we have to figure out, can we still make sense of our freedom or not? Speaking of investigations, the United States is imposing sanctions on an IDF unit, according to reports. This is not really official, but the U.S. is expected to announce sanctions against the IDF's Netzah Yehuda Battalion for alleged human rights abuses in the West Bank. This is significant because this would be the first time that the U.S. has imposed sanctions on an Israeli military unit and would see a ban on the battalion receiving any kind of U.S. military assistance. Now, again, of course, money is fungible. So if we give a lot of money to Israel, we just gave another, you know, whatever it was, $17 billion or something, and we fund 6.5% of the Israeli military. So to say, okay, but this one battalion isn't getting any is kind of silly, but it does make the point that the United States is going to object to some actions undertaken even by our allies. This gets to something we were talking about earlier in the week, and I think it helps to resolve a little bit of the conflict between, you know, there's one group of people, call them the liberal globalist party of America, which says we need to just go everywhere in the world and just bomb everybody into smithereens and, you know, just give money willy-nilly, no strings attached, you know, please take more of our tax base. There's that side of things. And then there are people who I think are actually kind of equally naive about politics who say, America, we need to just stop giving money to anyone at all. We need to stop being involved in anything overseas. We need to recognize we're a yeoman republic. We need to remember the words of Thomas Jefferson, go back to our plows, and I don't just focus on the homeland. That's not going to happen. That might seem nice. Maybe it's a nice ideal that you have. It's not going to happen because we're not a yeoman republic. We're not even really a nation state. We're a global empire. When I first realized that America was not just a nation state and that lots of the rules about nation states and nationalism even don't really apply to us is when I first learned that America has a military installation called AFRICOM, African Command. So, you know, I don't think yeoman republics have things called AFRICOM. You know what does? Global empires do when we are the hegemon of the entire world. So, whether you like it or not, we're going to be involved overseas. Every great nation in all of history has been involved in foreign affairs, has had interests outside of its own borders, and it's just going to happen. So I would prefer that we not do it in the way that the crazy liberal globalists who want to just bomb everything to smithereens and just give our money away willy-nilly, I'd prefer we not do it in their way. But then what are we supposed to do? Actually, take the specific action of the specific battalion of the specific nation of Israel out of it for a second. In principle here, I think this kind of thing is quite good, which is put strings on your money. If you're going to give your money to people overseas, including and especially to your allies, make sure that money is used to make them do what we want them to do. You need to. If the point is we're giving money to these people because they're acting as our vassal states for our vast global empire, okay, well, make sure they're not undercutting our position. Make sure we're doing what we want them to do, not the other way around. We don't want to put the cart before the horse or have the tail wag the dog. So how do you do that? You've got to put requirements on the money that you give to people. Now, in this case, in the case of this random IDF battalion, this is really more symbolic than anything. It's just one unit of the IDF. But in principle, it establishes an important principle. I think one way to reconcile the real bomb them all to smithereens crowd and the don't even read the international newspapers crowd is to say, make all foreign aid contingent on the recipients doing what we want. Now, speaking of wars overseas that we are involved in and funding, the Ukraine war wages on. I guess the U.S. grand strategy at this point is just fund the Ukrainians to kill as many Russians as possible to weaken Russia because we view Russia as a geopolitical adversary. And a lot of Ukrainians are going to die as that happens. But, you know, whatever. We just want to make sure that Russians keep getting killed too. So that's that. That's basically the beginning and end of the grand strategy over there. What does the U.S. Congress think about this? The Congress, supposedly a Republican Congress, just voted to give more money to Ukraine. But some members of Congress did not, including the Ukraine-born U.S. Representative Victoria Spartz, who I've been very impressed by. I think she's actually been a rather impressive congressman. And Spartz, despite having been born in Ukraine, despite obviously having some affection for her homeland, she voted no on Ukraine aid. A week ago, her hometown, Chernihiv, I'm probably mispronouncing that, was bombarded by Russia. Dozens of civilians in her hometown were slaughtered by the Russians. And still, she voted no. Why? Well, Congress Lady Spartz said, we have to pick our hills to die on and take them. Our southern border here in America is that hill. As I said many times, if Speaker Johnson's package does not include border security, I will not support that rule. I'll also not support sending cash to the Ukrainian government, only lethal aid. This woman is a model of immigration. If we reform our immigration regime to just let in a bunch of Victoria Spartzes, I'm for it. Okay, I'm not one of these people who says we can't let in a single immigrant ever again. That also is just never going to happen. But we need to let in immigrants like Victoria Spartz, who takes her oath of allegiance to America very, very seriously, and who takes her election as a United States congressman. You know, this is a U.S. House of Representatives, controls the purse. No one has any fiscal discipline in D.C. She obviously takes that very, very seriously. She takes her role in U.S. grand strategy very seriously. This is just perfect. Says we got to pick our hills to die on. We got to pick our big policy priorities. Mine is the southern border. Of course, because if a nation doesn't have borders, it's not a nation. The borders are what delineate a nation and distinguish it from other nations. She goes, that's a big one. So if this package doesn't include border security, I'm not voting for it. And also, she doesn't even just say, I don't want to give any money to Ukraine, period, and we're just going to focus on America and never focus on foreign affairs. She doesn't say that. But even after her hometown is bombarded by Russians, she says, I ain't giving money to the corrupt Ukraine government. That Ukraine government is very corrupt. It's one of the most notoriously corrupt governments in the world, long before this recent flare-up with Russia started. So she says, I like Ukraine. Maybe I'd like to help Ukraine, but we should be giving them bullets if we're going to give them anything. Don't be giving any cash payments to those crook oligarchs in Ukraine, the guys who got caught doing dodgy deals with Joe Biden. Remember when Joe Biden was threatening to withhold urgent military aid to Ukraine if Ukraine didn't stop looking into the company that his son was getting crook payments from? You remember that? And he bragged about it at the Council on Foreign Relations. This is a very corrupt place. Victoria Spartz saying, if you can't meet these basic demands, protect the southern border and don't just burn American money, just give it away to some of the biggest crooks on earth, then I'm out. I'm out. Even if that hurts my country of origin, I'm an American now. God bless the USA. Love that. Great stuff from Victoria Spartz. Speaking of America in the world, I'm just going to tease you. I'm going to give you, you know, I'm a little bit of a tease, right? There's a new poll out on what Americans think of the southern border. What percentage of Americans do you think approve of the current state of our southern border? What percent of Americans do you think believe the U.S. has control of its southern border? It's an election here. You might say, I don't know, 50-50. Even 50-50 wouldn't be great for Biden. The real number, just 20%. 20%. Brutal news for Biden. We will get into that, I suppose, tomorrow. Because now, we have a very important member block. We're talking about this globalist censorship regime really focusing on X right now in the lead up to 2024. Well, we have Chris Elston on Billboard. Chris will be on to discuss the attempted censorship of him specifically and where everything stands. The rest of the show continues now. You do not want to miss it. Become a member. Use code Knowles, K-N-O-W-L-E-S, at checkout for 2 months free on all annual plans.